Yay. So, aloha everyone, this is Brother Michael with my dear friend Minetta. How are you doing, Minetta?
Hello Michael, I'm doing well. It's cold here in England, but all good.
Yay. Well, I'm really, really, really grateful to have you here today because you are somebody who has really made things happen. And I'm personally inspired. In fact, I think you might be one of the people who gave me confidence without you ever doing anything or saying anything. I've not said this to you before. So just go out and do my own thing. Because, because I was like, if Nettie's doing it, Nettie's great. She's having a good time. She's doing what she loves. And so I can do it, you know.
Yeah.
So I've never actually said that to you, but I used to help you out in the past with some stuff, but now I do my own thing. But anyway, rather than talking too much about that, I just wanted to share. Minetta is the founder of Relax Kids, and she creates all kinds of products and services to help children relax. And maybe you can just talk about what you do now. Where things are at now with your business?
Yes. So we now have, I probably lost count the number of CDs that we have now, but we must have at least 20 projects, at least, I would say. Mm. So books, I've written 2 books and produced a range of CDs and affirmation cards for children, stickers, posters, to help them relax, manage their anxiety, anger, stress, and help develop self-esteem at the same time, as well as help with sleeping problems. And then as well as that, I developed a system to teach children to relax in a class format. So I developed this 7-step system to teaching children to relax. With movement, games, stretching, massage, breathing, affirmations, and visualizations. So it actually takes children from a high energy to a low energy. And I've now trained up, I think, nearly 700 Relax Kids coaches in 27 countries. They come to England predominantly. And so that's where we are now, 10 years later.
Wow, that's a huge amount of stuff. Wow. I didn't know you'd done all that. And by the way, everyone listening to this, you can go to relaxkids.com and check out what's going on there. So, this is extraordinary, really, Nettie. So, what I'd love to hear about is what started you doing this, because now you're helping kids all over the world and that didn't exist 10 years ago. So how come this has now happened? Like, what was it that got you going in the first place? What started you in that direction?
Yeah, I was a children's entertainer for 13 years, and over those years I noticed a change in children's behavior in the inability to sit still, listen, concentrate, and just be still and listen to my show. So I wanted to do something to help children concentrate and listen and learn. And having practiced meditation since I was 12, I really believed that meditation, relaxation, mindfulness would have a huge impact on children's behaviour and concentration, etc. So that's where it all started. But the problem was, 10 years ago, the concept of meditation for children was in the UK very, very new. And it just wasn't really, there were a few pockets of people that would do it, but it was still a little bit too new agey, Some people thought it was a bit occult, strange, weird, religious, and then frowned upon. So I had to find a way to get children to meditate, relax, in a way that would be acceptable to adults. So I came up with the idea of changing all the fairy stories into relaxation meditations. So children would imagine they were Jack climbing the beanstalk, floating in the clouds, or they'd imagine they were Sleeping Beauty lying on a bed and relaxing. And this seemed to work with all the fairy stories, apart from the Big Bad Wolf and Little Red Riding Hood. So I had this book. I managed to get this book published, and the guy, the publisher, said it's going to be a year till the book's out. And I just thought, I can't wait a year. Something needs to be done now. And at that time, my mum, I'm half Portuguese Indian, so I'm from Goa. My father's from Goa, and my mum is from England. And my father died 20 years ago, but my mum wanted to leave England and go and live in Goa. So she sold her house and gave me my inheritance early. So I had £45,000. And this was under strict instructions to buy a flat or a deposit for a flat. And but there was something inside that said, I just can't do that with this money. I need to put it into something worthwhile. Having a house is worthwhile, but there was something urging me on to do something else. So I created a range of CDs. At the time, I think I had three. And I remember the struggle that I went through to create these three CDs. Mm. But and I remember getting them in my tiny little flat. Would have been 2003 now, when I first had the CDs arrive. It took us about 2 years of developing everything. And it fills up my bedroom. I had 6,000 CDs filling up my bedroom, and I had to sleep in the box room. I thought, what do I do now? So that was the start.
Wow. Wow.
Mm.
So...
And then also with the classes, because I've sort of developed this business by fluke, really, which has a two-pronged approach. So I've got the products, but I've also got the classes. And again, that happened around the same time, about 2001. I had five, six children. They were children of friends who'd come to my flat every week, and I would just take them through, or develop, really, use them as guinea pigs and develop this relaxation system based on, and do the relaxation classes based on my whole life experience. Now, I'm not education trained, I'm not a teacher, but I am what I have done is theatre and performing arts. So I used all the breathing techniques that I picked up from singing, stretching that I picked up from our dance, etc. So it was a whole life experience that I put into these seven steps. And then what happened is I created a website, just a one page, and then started getting people emailing me saying, are there classes in Edinburgh? Are there classes in all different parts of the UK? And obviously at that point I thought, I need to train other people. And so I developed the training package, which that probably took quite a while to develop the training package, but I started that in 2005.
Right. So just to, you know, to clarify, you started off with performing arts and theatre for kids, yeah?
I started off, performing, general performing on stage,
yeah.
Not just for children, for adults as well, but yeah.
Okay. But then you were doing children's parties and things.
Yeah.
And then you realised that the kids can't sit straight and were...
Yeah.
And so you thought, well, there's you noticed there was a bigger problem going on here that was beyond something that you had maybe ever thought about because you didn't see it before, you know?
Yeah.
And then you thought, well, I mean, was there a point where you thought to yourself, well, I could carry on just performing and doing this stuff, but for some reason it's more important for me to help these kids relax? Like what happened? I mean, what happened there?
Yeah, it was such an easy job, and I would earn a fortune in a couple of hours. So I'd only need to work 4 hours a week, pretty much.
Wow.
4 to 6 hours a week. That would keep me going. But somehow, so I would have had a good job, and I was very well respected in London. And in fact, I'd had a phone call just the other day saying from someone, this is 5 years later of me not being a performer, an entertainer, saying, I really only want you. So, you know, it was something that I was good at, I enjoyed at the time, but I just felt then there was something more. I needed to do something more for children.
Mm-hmm. This is a big deal.
Pardon?
That's a really big deal there, that you basically gave something up that you were good at, that you were getting paid well for, to do something else.
And also, I remember, because I moved from London in around, I think it was 2005, and I left because I moved from London to Oxford, I took the leap of faith. And at that point, I was probably selling I don't know exactly, but I was hardly making any money, really, maybe one or two orders on the internet a day. So you're talking very little. Mm-hmm. And my entertainment business was still supporting Relax Kids. Mm-hmm. But I took the leap of faith, I moved to Oxford, and the next day, the orders started coming in. It was quite phenomenal.
Wow.
Yeah, and I made a conscious decision. I went back to London a couple of times to fulfill a few parties, but then I just thought, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to make a clean break. I'm not even going to try and start up an entertainment business in Oxford, because I could quite easily do that and earn really well. I thought, I'm just going to take the leap of faith. And it was scary, very, very scary, moving to a new place where my rent was 4 times more than what I had been paying.
What a trip. That's so funny.
I look back and I think, why did I do that?
Yeah, this is great. So this is the real deal here. So you did something you were good at, then you decided there was something more important. It took you ages to actually get the first CDs out and stuff. So there was a big gap between your idea and actually having something people could buy that, you know. But then you weren't really making any money or getting much happening for a while. You had bigger expenses, and the whole thing really was kind of a bit silly in a sense. And a bit,
it was mad.
Yeah.
Michael, it was mad, and I remember I said I had £45,000. I remember one of those £1,000 going for paying for an advert in a baby directory, which I thought, oh, this is really good. I'm have a whole page, and this will be for the whole year. So, and I did not get one phone call.
No way.
So that's like a mistake, quite an expensive mistake. And I also remember spending a couple of £1,000 going with a good few hundred CDs to the London a London exhibition for children. And it lasted 5 or 7 days. And I stood there with my CDs and my very expensive exhibition, which must have cost about £2,000 to be there. And I sold, over the 7 days, I sold 15 CDs.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so at the time, that was £150. So you just think, and I think in the end, I was so depressed. I remember it was near Kensington High Street, and I just went off shopping. I even left my stand. It's so depressing.
Wow.
And there are moments like that where you just think, why am I doing this? Nobody wants what I've got. I'm in the wrong, this is too niche.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is a really wonderful story. So you basically took leap of faith, wasted loads of money playing around, it didn't work out, felt depressed, did get some stuff out. I designed some of your earlier... Because I used to do design work back in the day, did you... The ones that I designed, like in 2003 or something, were they the original ones?
They were. I think you designed the yellow one, the shiny stars one.
Yeah, that's right.
And then I think Nigel took over from you.
Yeah.
And did Princess. That's right. You did the first one, and then we had to change it. I can't remember. But yeah, that just gives an idea of the complications of.
Yeah, what a
trick. Yes, that's right. He did the first ones.
Yeah. So yeah, I helped you out doing that. So it's nice to be part of the journey in some way, So I had no idea at that time where you were at in your business or what was really going on exactly.
I don't think anyone did. And you know, just simple things like that nobody tells you that, so for example, I'll tell you how complicated it was. I couldn't get to be able to sell, you need an ISBN number. But nobody would give me an ISBN number because they said it's not a book and you can't have an ISBN number for a CD. And so I was going from pillar to post going, but it is, I need an ISBN number and nobody was telling me where to go. So it was all these lots of different things that I had to figure out and barcodes. And it was a real huge learning curve, and there were many days that it was quite stressful, I would say, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. so let's just keep playing out this timeline here. So you were in London, you were doing your entertainment, and then you decided to basically do that a little bit, but work on relaxed kids, and that happened for a couple of years. And then you moved to Oxford. Then all of a sudden, as soon as you moved to Oxford, you started getting orders. Is that when you moved into the place, the beautiful little cottage that I used to go to?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Lovely place, yeah. Remember coming around there making chocolate?
That's right.
Yes. So anyway, so there you were. Working on Relax Kids, you decided to stop doing the other entertainment stuff, even though it would make money. You wanted to focus on Relax Kids. Then what happened? Because since then, I've left England, and I don't really know what you've been doing.
Okay, well, so we're in 2005 now, so yeah. I've just moved to Oxford.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, of me moving to Oxford, I had a company that were fulfilling my CDs. They weren't selling many, but they had them in their warehouse. And so, because I was terrible at accounts, I got into such a muddle with all things to do with accounts and orders and admin. And so I had this company to do it. And they went into liquidation. So I had a phone call from someone saying, you really need to come and collect these CDs, because if you don't, the administrators will come and will seize them as part of their assets.
Oh, wow.
So, so I nearly lost the whole thing.
Wow.
Yeah. So I had to literally, with a couple of cars, rush down, and it was quite far. It wasn't in Oxford, it was way away. And so those were the sorts of humps that I went over.
Yeah.
And then I brought all these CDs back, and I had a very, very tiny cottage, and I put them all in my kitchen. And I remember just looking at them, thinking, now what? And the neighbour came round and just said, oh gosh, it looks like mayhem in here. And then I just burst into tears and I said, it is. But then And then what happened, I saw, yeah, 2005, I saw an advert for a competition, a business competition. So I thought, okay, I'm going to go for this. Now, I did my my pitch or my I sent my application in, and I wrote it as if it had already happened. So I wrote the application, the pitch, like a fairy story. So once upon a time, my nurse had a dream to teach children to relax. She rubbed her magic lamp, you know, made a wish upon a star. And I did it as if I'd already won the prize, and she won Oxford's best business, best young business. And the prize was an office for a year, a service office for a whole year. And I remember driving past that office and just like having this thought, I've won it. I've already won it. It's mine. And of course, I won it. So all those CDs were out of my kitchen, and I had an office, a beautiful, beautiful office space in a service office with a receptionist, and everything was safe.
Oh, wow.
They sorted out the postage, and it was all easy. But then the next hurdle was I was terrible at admin. And so I would go to the office every day and get into complete stress because I hated working in an office environment. I didn't understand figures, got into muddle with emails, and so the next step was to take somebody on, which was a huge jump because you're now looking at having to pay somebody's wage. So that was my next hurdle.
Right. So I just want to congratulate you on your manifesting an office, because so you had all your CDs that you just salvaged that otherwise would have been stolen from you.
Yeah.
And you were stressed out about them in being in your house and just like, what the hell am I going to do? But you probably were you asking the question, what am I going to do? What am I going to do about this in your mind while they were all in your kitchen?
Yes.
And so I'm just saying, because we talk about this manifestation process that people use consciously or unconsciously. No doubt your unconscious mind was looking for stuff, found an advert.
Yeah.
You knew you'd win the advert. The reason you found the advert is because you were asking a question.
Yeah.
Then you found the advert. Then you basically wrote it as if it's already done, and you sent the vibrations out to the room. And
yeah.
Did you have any question in your mind at all whether or not you were going to win that?
No. No.
So,
I absolutely knew I was going to win it.
Isn't that fascinating?
Every time I drove past, I drove past and say, all my CDs are already in that office. Yeah,
wow.
I knew I was going to win it.
Yeah, no question at all. And,
no.
And you didn't have necessarily...
And if I did have a doubt, if there was a doubt, I would just put it to one side and say, no, it's definitely mine.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
I need it.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Okay, well, this is exciting. So then what happened next? So you were all in a muddle about emails and admin and all that stuff, which I personally can't handle either. I have actually got a couple of people helping me do that all the time. Otherwise, I'd be a total mess myself. So what happened next?
Then I think at the time, what I did was I outsourced the admin to another company in the reception, in that office block.
Okay.
And so they were coming in and they were doing that for me, so I didn't have to worry.
Nice.
And then I went through a couple of employees, and I had various all sorts of things going on. I had employees who would say they did these certain hours and they never did.
Mm-hmm.
They would just sit and watch iPlayer, listen to music. I had employees who stole from the company. I sent off their, used my courier system and you know, all sorts of that sort of those sorts of stresses and strains. Because, and the problem was, I wasn't there managing going in every day, because I'm not an office manager, I'm a creator. So I was getting stressed. Well, I was stressed trying to be a manager when I, and then realizing I really can't do this admin thing. I really need to be at home creating. And so when I did that, and then I took on people, then it would be stressful because I couldn't manage them, and they would take people were taking advantage of me, and that felt hurtful. And especially because of what I was doing, it felt that there was a disregard for what I was doing and a disregard for me. Because, you know, we're talking quite a few hundreds of pounds, maybe thousands, that was lost and whittled away through, well, however you, I don't know, you know what you call it, but then you'd it comes back to my own lack of management.
Yeah. So what do you do about that?
Well, I'm not very good with confrontation at all. I did have a business advisor who was able to, you know, help out. But I'm more to the idea of spending time in silence, sending that person good vibes, and really feeling that it will all work out, even though you just don't know how it is going to work out, but it will be okay. And I just do believe that if you're doing good with an honest heart and you have integrity, you cannot fail.
Yeah.
No matter what anyone else that tries to do to you.
Absolutely. So, you had these things happen with people, and you realised that it's ultimately your responsibility, because it's your company, to take care of it. Because, I mean, I'm the same way. It's like, I'd rather not manage everything, really. But at the end of the day, it's my thing, and someone's got to take 100% responsibility for everything, even if they're not doing everything. So you took that 100% responsibility and sent out the vibrations and really held that vision, a bit like you did with the office space, like you want to have people who are good and like they're all good now. I've done that plenty of times myself. No, love and blessings to everyone. But, then what happened?
Then,
but where are we now on your timeline?
On the timeline, we'd be talking, we'd be talking about 2007, 2008. And then what happened, around this time of this bad nut in terms of employee, I met my husband, and that's a story in itself.
Yeah.
But but he has been very integral to the whole growth of Relax Kids. So it is very much related to the whole story and the timeline.
Yeah. Well, why don't you tell us about how you met him? Because I remember you told me this. It was a wonderful story. If you want to share that,
Okay. Well, again, using the power of manifestation, I went away on a raw food. Oh, you'll like this one, Michael. On a raw food retreat for 3 weeks, and I did. And over those 3 weeks, I was avidly reading and listening to The Secret, which of course we all know. And I really wanted. I just thought I really want to find a partner, and I don't want to go through the whole dating thing, the whole meeting people. I just want to go straight to the right person. And so I had a notebook, quite a thick notebook, And I wrote down all the qualities that I was looking for in this person. Then I wrote a story using qualities, virtue cards, angel cards, and there are these love cards from Chuck Spisano. And I wrote a story with loads of affirmations of what would happen, and a castle was part of that, and living happily ever after, and it was a complete fairy story, but with the affirmations. And then when I came back home, I put up an advert in my local vegetarian cafe saying Prince wanted between 30 and 40, you need to be vegetarian, this, and this. And that was there for a month, and I couldn't understand why there weren't any replies.
Yeah, what's going on?
And then I looked again, and I put the wrong email. So the email was that I put a Cinderella at hotmail.com, and it should have been .co.uk or something like that.
Right.
And so I thought, okay, so I'll have one more stab at this, and I'm only going to do it once, and I'll put something up on Gumtree. So I put the Prince Wanted, and I had about 20 replies, and you know, most of them were really silly, but there was one reply that was in old-fashioned English, and it was so beautiful, and we emailed for a week, and then we agreed to meet. Well, he wanted to meet me, and then I sort of panicked a bit, because I thought, oh gosh, this is like a real person. And we agreed to meet on the Saturday at Blenheim Palace, which is our beautiful local palace, which Winston Churchill was born. But the day before, I went to a cafe, which I hardly ever go to, and to meet a friend. And 10 minutes later, I just texted him, saying, are you at the Science Park Cafe? And I thought, oh no, he's a stalker. And what had happened, he told me afterwards, that he goes there just on a Friday, because it's a work-type cafe. And he was sitting down, thinking about me, and eating his dinner, lunch, and he looked up at the till, and I was standing, and he goes, I can't believe that's her. And I swear to the Lord, to God, that at the same time, I remember paying for my coffee and taking 10p change. And as I took that 10p change from the woman, I gave her a smile. And it was like one of those moments, because you normally, we take change and we have a lot of unaware moments in our lives, mainly, and then we don't remember what we've done and where did we put our keys. But I remember, as I said, I thought somebody saw that smile.
Wow.
And I think we freaked each other out a little bit, but then we thought, no, come on, I remember emailing him saying, look, I think we need to see this through, because this is all too bizarre. And so we met next day, and we got on so well. We met at the palace. 4 days later, he asked me to marry him.
Oh, wow.
I didn't even tell him my name, because I thought he would Google who I was, what I did, and I didn't want that to come between us or, you know, change anything. And then we got married a year later to the day and the time that he saw me in the cafe at Blenheim Palace.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that is, for me, that is my second story of manifestation.
Yeah, that's incredible.
But what is incredible is I still have this beautiful notebook that I wrote in that holiday, the few weeks before. I look back, and he is every single thing on that notebook.
Wow.
Even down to the point I put musician, and he is a musician who now does all the music for Relax Kids. After a week of meeting me, he looked at the website, and he said, oh, there's a mistake on your website. Ask me to do proofreading. I used to be a proofreader, and I have on my paper, I need someone to help proofread.
Oh, my God. Wow.
I know. It was incredible.
Wow.
And so he's a web designer. He's a designer. He has done all the video for Relax Kids, all photography. So I have actually not had to contract anybody, because Stuart has done everything.
Wow.
So we're talking now 2007, and after a month, he gave up his job and came to Relax Kids.
Wow.
Mm. And he's now the MD, because he does it. He manages everybody so much better than I do, so I just hand it over. Mm.
What a trip. Wow. So since then, Stuart's been involved in tightening everything up.
Yes, he's, as a result of, since he's been on board, I've developed, so I only had about three, maybe four or five products, and now in terms of the CDs, we have the range. We've got the Chill Skills for older children and lots of other CDs and other products that he has done. He even did a DVD, an animation of me reading the stories, and he animated the books behind the pictures behind me.
Wow.
And he taught himself to do it.
Wow.
Yeah, a little bit clever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, incredible. I'm very, very lucky.
Lucky,
or is it luck? Is it luck, or is it destiny? Is it that it is that happened for a higher reason? The whole purpose of, you know, why I started Relax Kids. It's almost like as if it's not been me.
Yeah.
And even I have to say, when I look back at the tracks, and I don't remember writing them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember writing them.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I've actually just spent the last 2-3 days clearing out all my stuff, and I've just recently been on the computer looking through all my files, because that's just like a raw machine. And I'm like, oh my God, look at all this stuff that I've done, you know. Where did it come? I mean, it keeps coming. Oh, this is, I didn't even know I had this thing. Where did this? So yeah, I really feel the same way. It's divinely inspired. It's happening through us, really.
Definitely. And then I feel I can't really, I feel uncomfortable taking credit, to be honest with you. Of course, I'm part of it, but it doesn't really feel that it's really me.
Mm.
It's almost like it's here because you are the instrument, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is.
Yeah, it's much easier with that awareness.
Mm.
Otherwise, it can be a bit daunting. And
yeah.
You know, you're basically a creator.
Yes.
And so, but you're an instrument for creation, really. So it just comes through. And so now here we are, 2011, 2012 is just, you know, couple of weeks away now. So where are you at now? Like what's, how's the business doing and the service, and like, you know, is everything running along nicely and
consistently? Yeah, we in the last year, I think Stuart said, well, in the last couple of months, I'd say, we've had an up, what do you call, see, I don't even know the technical words, but we've had an increase of around 30% in sales.
Right, that's pretty
amazing.
We're
in the middle of a recession.
Yeah, well.
And we're a niche market, and we're high end. And Stuart was just saying just the other day that usually the businesses that are successful at this time are the low end, cheap pound shop type things.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite unusual. You know, we feel very lucky that that we're managing well.
Yeah. Well, I think you're offering such huge value that it's guaranteed to work out.
Yeah.
So you're now financially comfortable.
Yeah, I'm fortunate enough that I take a wage from the business, and even if I don't do any work that month, I still take a wage from the business. Obviously, I am working for the business, but there are times where I don't. And we employ, so Stuart takes a wage, we have an office manager, we have a full-time designer, and we have a marketing person as well. So we have now, is that five of us?
Mm-hmm.
Five of us, and then sometimes we have six. It just depends. So between five and six people taking a wage from the company.
Wow, that's great.
Scary.
Scary, but wonderful.
But yes, really, really wonderful.
Nice.
Yes. Now, another thing that just on the timeline, as you called it, one thing that really was an interesting scenario for me, in a way, in the whole scheme of things, was when I went on the TV, The Dragon's Den.
Yes.
I'm not sure. In America, it's called Shark Tank.
Right.
In most countries, it's called Dragon's Den. The idea of a business program where you pitch your business to five millionaires and they give you a certain amount of money for a percentage of your business.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, it was around the time that I won the competition, and I remember thinking, I'd never go on Dragon's Den, never go. It's really horrible, and it doesn't fit with my values. But I received an email, and I just won the competition. I thought, oh, I'll just fill it in. And then I kept going to the next level. Before I knew it, they were doing a screen test. And then they wanted me in on Tuesday, even though they said, we'll let you know in a couple of months. And so I went on, and I did my pitch. But at one point, I said, I didn't set Relax Kids to make lots of money. And there was pin drop silence. And they looked at each other and say, how can you come and ask for investment when you're saying you don't want to make any money?
Wow.
And so they were really intrigued by it. They laughed at it in one sense, but they went away. Normally they're really, really horrible to people and really put them down. But they all said, you know, you're lovely, but I can't invest. And another one said, I don't know whether you're lovely or cuckoo, but I can't invest. And one said he actually felt that some sort of peace in the room. And he said, I almost feel like you're hypnotizing me, which of course I wasn't. But he said, and I'm going to say now I'm not going to invest, just in case you hypnotize me, because you started to feel really peaceful.
Wow.
But that was quite a pivotal point, because I had national exposure in front of millions of people in the UK, and then it went on to, it's now shown on the episode that I was on, British Airways, up when you're up in the air, it's shown, and it went to Canada, New Zealand, Australia. And so it opened up, and again it was just one of those things that I sort of felt compelled to do, without, even though I'd sort of said, oh, I'd never do that, but it's almost like something else had been driving me to do it, because that's the thing, if you don't have money to advertise, then you get free advertising, and the right people, it attracted the right people, rather than the people who were interested in business and money, it attracted parents and teachers who thought, I really get what she's doing.
That's amazing. When was that?
That was, again, just after The Office. It was 2005, so that's now 6 years ago, 20th of December 2005.
Wow.
Yeah, and subsequently, I went on again. They have another program called Where Are They Now? And I was just showing where I was, and I progressed a little. And then I was just chosen out of 700 people who have been on Dragon's Den over the last 7 years. I was chosen as an example of somebody who has been successful despite taking having the money. And I think that I've put it up on YouTube. if you just type up Relax Kids on YouTube, you may be able to see, it was called How to Win in the Den. And the way that they did it was, it was so lovely. I was so lucky that they edited it so beautifully in my favour, because you know what they're like.
Yeah.
They can edit it in whatever they want. Just showing that this is someone who had a, and they even use the word dream, someone who had a dream, but isn't interested in the money, but still is interested in making a social difference.
Yeah.
So, which is sort of like, that actually turns Dragon's Den on its, completely on its head. So for them to do a follow-up and say, well, here's someone who's actually doing everything against Dragon's Den, that's quite amazing.
Yeah, it is. Wow.
So and that, sorry, and I was just going to say, and that has been quite recent, and I would say that has really helped bring a whole new lot of people to the business who maybe wouldn't have heard of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I would say, Nessie, just matter of fact, frankly, that you have essentially relied on magic all the way through, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, my children's entertainer name was Magical Nessie.
Well, there you go.
Magical so there you
Nessie.
Go.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
It has been an incredible journey. Hard work though, but something's been pushing me through.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, what you have done, as far as I can tell, is you had a vision that came from a higher inspiration, which was just to do Relax Kids in the first place, yeah. based on seeing yeah. that there was a need, you know?
Yeah.
So you didn't just think, oh, I want to, you know, just do this random thing, and that's why you did it. You saw that there was a genuine need. Some
yeah.
people were suffering, they needed help, and you could help
yeah.
them, you know. So that's really important that you started yeah. with that, you know. It was coming from a place of love and compassion, you know. And you also used all of your skills that you developed and your whole life experience as well.
Yes.
So you found a need that you resonated with, and you used all your life experience to combine
yes.
to fulfill that need.
Yeah.
Then you took a bunch of risks and made various mistakes in terms of spending money on things that didn't work out and
yeah.
employees who were a bit of a hassle. But you just kept doing it, kept using the visualization, kept following your inspiration. Like, one of the things that I want to just sort of highlight here is that your ability to notice that an idea is coming to your mind, like in the case of winning the office space or going along with Dragon's Den or, you know, looking for the prince. And you didn't just sit there and think that's a nice idea. You actually did something about it.
Yeah.
Which is what a lot of people don't do.
I'm the opposite. I'm very good. Like, for example, when the publisher told me it'll be a year till the book's out, that next day I sat down for 8 hours and I wrote the first CD. I don't sort of think, oh, wouldn't it be nice if I could write a CD? I just get on and I do it. And that's one thing I have always done. If I have an idea, I pretty much try to put it into practice then and there. Sometimes a bit too impetuously, impatiently, maybe, but I don't hang around with ideas.
Yeah. Which is huge. So I want to highlight that even more. So you get an idea. Like, let's just go through this little process that you have. So how do you get ideas? Where do they come from? Like, what situation? What is the, like, tradition? You know, is there something that happens when you get, like, golden ideas?
Any time I can have an idea in the shower. But very often I may have an idea just when I'm out it could come when I'm walking, or if I see a book in a shop, and I'll see a certain colour, or I'll see a title and think, ooh, that gives me an idea for this. But I do tend to, my creativity comes best from when I'm working on my own. That's why I still work from home. I don't go into the office. I am terrible at the office because I can't think, I can't work with lots of people around me, but I can be very creative when I'm just pottering around at home,
yeah.
and very productive.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm the same way. I have to have absolute silence or music that I like. No one interrupting me. People get reprimanded if they interrupt me when I'm writing books and things.
Yeah.
That everyone knows, don't mess with Michael. He's working. So it's good to have that. So you might just get an idea any time. Okay, so let's imagine that you've been wandering about, you're in the shower or something, an idea comes. Let's say you're in the shower, right? So you can't know pen and paper, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, an idea comes. What do you do about it?
I usually get out as quick as I can and write it down.
Okay.
Because I will forget it, because I have too many of these ideas.
All right, so let's say...
I've got two systems, mm-hmm. and one which Stuart really hates, and and I'm in real big trouble about, but I email myself the idea. So I have email folders, which is like, you know, he just says it's like having lots of really untidy desks. I have a very untidy computer. But all the other thing is I'll write it on a piece of paper, and I'll put it in a pile. And just recently this week, I have been through the pile that I have had in the drawer of all the different ideas that I've had, you know, little snippets of thoughts over the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. And then I put more in the book. So anything that I haven't already acted on, I'm now able to start doing that.
Great. So if you get an idea, you write it down on a piece of paper or email it.
Write it down. If it is something I can do straight away, then I will do my best to try and do it. If it's something that I think this needs, I haven't got time, or if it needs to be, I need to wait, then I'll leave it. And when I come back to it, I usually find that I can combine it with another idea.
Yeah, so you just put them... I mean, that's pretty much what I do. I actually have just gone through everything, in fact, yesterday even. And I have a stack of files that's basically about 2 foot high, if I put them all on top of each other,
mm-hmm.
of ideas, which is a bit ridiculous. But but that's just how it happens, you know. But you know, then they're there, and they're at least not floating around, because there's nothing worse than having them in our head floating around.
Absolutely.
That's stressful, you know, so you get it
out.
But then, if you come back to them, you'll find that, like, a bunch of them would all go together and become one big thing, which is more useful than any of them by themselves or something like that.
Yes.
So, all right, then when it comes to you creating products and putting them into practice, how do you go about doing that?
Okay, well, just to think. I can only go by, in terms of products, my original system is all quite haphazard, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I suppose, but you see, the thing is now, Stuart's in control of new products, and so he project manages everything. I'll have an idea, he'll develop that idea, make it technical, and then get on and get the design team doing it, and it just happens.
Mm-hmm.
So I literally sometimes just have to say one thing, and then he's off, he can run with that idea.
So, great.
Whereas before, I had to do everything. I had to source the designer, I had to find the barcode, I had to do everything.
Yeah.
But now I'm lucky that he can take that over.
That's great. So I think this is ultimately what it has to become like. This is what's happened with me over the years as well, is that I realize I'm best at creating stuff, doing interviews, yeah. doing courses, and things like what we're doing now. But when it comes to posting stuff and getting CDs made and getting stuff printed and like admin and customer service and
mm-hmm.
blah blah blah, that just freaks me out. And basically, if you had to do all that, you wouldn't have time to create anything at all, would you?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
And if I had to do that, I wouldn't be able to create anything either, you know?
Exactly. And yet the lady in my office who does the admin and accounts, she can't think of anything better than put things together with a calculator and,
yeah.
and add up receipts. She just loves it.
Yeah.
So, you know, we all have our own place in life
mm-hmm.
and we all have our own skills, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm so pleased it's like that.
Yeah. That's great. So, this is wonderful. Now, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about... what we didn't talk about in your story is how you managed to sell anything at all to start with. Because you had an idea, you created mm. some, wrote a book, created some mm. CDs. How did you actually get anyone to buy your stuff and mm-hmm. find out about it? Like, because
yeah.
that's a whole journey, isn't it? Like one,
because sure,
in
yeah.
business there's like creating stuff and ideas, and then there's actual human beings purchasing things and making it sustainable,
yeah.
you know?
Mm-hmm. I think, so I made a list of all the distributors at the time that were around and contacted them, and that was incredibly hard for me
mm-hmm.
to phone up. And I remember calling up Waterstones, the head buyer for Waterstones, and I go, hello, my name's Manetta, and I've written a book, and I just must have sounded so awful. And actually, he was really, really lovely. But yeah, so I contacted all the main distributors and sent them samples, and some took it up, some didn't, and some came later when they saw others were selling them.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, I think two of those distributors, maybe three, have now gone bust.
Oh, wow.
Some of which with my CDs, you know, owing thousands of pounds. So isn't that interesting?
Mm.
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah, that is very interesting.
Yeah, so because the whole industry is completely changing.
That's amazing.
So because we're all going to MP3s now. So that's one thing we're trying to have to keep ahead of the time and make sure we're, you know, not just focusing on CDs, we're focusing on other things. But that was one thing I did, contacted distributors. Then I, at the time, I had a friend who was very good on the phone, and I hired her to be my PR, and so she contacted more distributors. She also contacted bookshops and also some press. So, and then I was lucky enough to get a little bit of press in some magazines, and particularly the Daily Telegraph one Sunday raved about Relaxed Kid CDs,
mm-hmm.
and that really, I had a highly recommended from the Daily Telegraph, which really did help.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing, I took my CDs and I sold them at exhibitions, Mind, Body, Spirit exhibitions. That was my target market to start with. Even though deep down I knew it wasn't just Mind, Body, Spirit. It's not just the yoga types. This is for all children. But at the time, they were the only people who would buy. But now, it's mainstream. And interestingly enough, Relaxed Kids, other people have now copied, and which is fine, you know, because the market has been created. There was no market for children's relaxation, children's meditation 10 years ago, but now there is a market and there are other people doing it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you've created a niche
yeah.
market, and now
yeah.
it's bigger. You know, like one of the people who is marketing stuff that I've studied is called Evan Pagan. Have you ever heard of him?
Say that again,
sorry? Avon Pagan.
No.
I think you'll like his stuff. I know you're into marketing.
Mm.
But anyway, he created the dating advice market. So he went in a bookshop and he was looking for advice on a date, getting a date, like the first part of getting a date. That nothing existed at all. So he created it. Now he essentially owns that category, even though there's plenty of other people doing it. So you in a sense, own the relax kids category, in a sense, even though there's other people there. Like, you're the main, you're the number one, you're the premier person in your own category, which is great.
It's interesting. Sorry, Michael. It's interesting because, you know, there have been times where I've seen other people maybe copy or do similar things, and then your first reaction can go into panic because you think, oh, it's taking away, you know, what am I going to do? Will I still be able to sell my CDs, or people are copying? And then you think, well, no, there's enough for everyone. We have a market, still helping children. But then you go back to, you think about Anita Roddick and the Body Shop in the 80s. There were lots of copycats, and I remember, you know, lots of shops that were painted green, selling natural things, but the only one that stayed was the Body Shop, because the Body Shop had her, you know, had her value system, and it came from her, rather than someone just coming and seeing a good market, or seeing a good way to make a quick bit of money.
Big difference. Yeah. So you've established your values, what you value. You actually care.
Yeah.
You know, because you can't. I mean, it's hard to do something if you don't really care about the people you're helping. You know, the reason I'm doing this interview, the reason you've agreed to do this interview, ultimately, is we care about other people doing what they love.
Yeah.
Which is why we're sharing this information. And there's love in it, and so we can do it from the heart. And so you cared, and ultimately, you know, you've gone through the trials and tribulations and challenges, which wouldn't be possible if it was just for the money, frankly.
If what, sorry?
If it was just for the money, then probably it would have ended by now. Like, imagine if you were, like, working in selling gold business on the internet or something that you're not really into, it wouldn't have worked. So, alright, this is good. So when it comes to marketing advice, because a lot of people, like, they already know what they love, they care about what they do, they've got their values, they're doing it from the heart, but they have no idea at all about how to market their stuff. Like, What is the best lessons that you've learned in terms of marketing? Marketing, what we mean by marketing is, you know, is making people understand what you have, so in such a way they recognize the value of it and want to buy it.
Yeah, I mean, for me, advertising is an absolute no-no, and I would never do that now. So that's one thing I wouldn't do.
Just to clarify what you mean by advertising, in case someone doesn't.
Meaning buying and getting an advert in a magazine.
Okay.
So that has traditionally been the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And to have this, get into a newspaper, get into a magazine. But that has not worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
What I feel is, I just think that when you are really passionate about something, and you really want to connect with other people, you build a really good, a personal almost contact with your customers, and you listen to them, you ask them what they want, and you give it to them. The other thing is building a community, building a tribe, building a group of people who will shout for you, so you don't need to shout. And that's how I feel, this is what we have now. There are lots of people that talk to a lot of people about relaxed kids, and I'm very often unaware of it. Sometimes I hear the short story, sometimes I don't. But it really is, Relax Kids has pretty much built on word of mouth. So when you have something that's really good, when it works, you're really passionate about it. You're also, this is important, I think, although it sounds maybe a bit silly, but you are a nice person to deal with, and you are thoughtful, you're caring, you care about your customers. Your customers will pass that on. Initially, maybe you can ask for testimonials, ask for referrals, and if somebody loves your stuff, then they will be happy to do that. But that, and the other thing is, really build the brand around you and your values, because I really feel that often it is you that you're selling, and who you are. I think if I wasn't in Relax Kids anymore, it probably wouldn't succeed in the way that it is now, because it sort of comes from me.
Yeah. Yeah, so really it's a matter of listening, because at the end of the day, what we're doing is for other people.
Yeah.
What do they want? Giving them what they want, and giving it in a way that it really works. So it actually has
an easy way. Yeah, as well.
Easy. I mean, this kind of classic marketing is really care, listen to what people want, give it to them so they get a result very, very quickly, and then they'll be so happy about it they want to tell all their friends anyway. That's just what they do, because they actually have been benefiting. I mean, the thing is, if something works and it actually solves a problem, people want to tell their friends about it.
They will.
Yeah, so you've done something remarkable, and therefore it's being remarked about.
Yeah, exactly.
What would, is there anything else, by the way, you would like to mention about marketing, just to someone who's new, you know, like if they're...
I guess it's trying to think, come out with something that's slightly different. Be creative, have a little bit of fun, and probably don't get too concerned about it. And also, slow. I really do believe that it's the slow burn that creates success. Okay, so I've been going 10 years now, but I've slowly built this company. We've never had any debt. We never have investment. We just, whatever money comes in, if there's a little bit extra, we can create another CD or create something else. And then there's never a feeling there's any panic that, you've got loads of money, you're owing, etc. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that if you build something slowly, with integrity, then it can be more long-lasting. And I think sometimes when we talk about marketing, there can be a real feeling of pressure and impatience and this real sort of like, I've got to get out there. I've got to get, everybody's got to know about me. And I just think, no, you know, even if just 5 people know about you and they really love it, let them tell their friends. So I would say slow down. And I do love this idea of the feminine way of business. If you think about the difference between, I'm talking about feminine energy, not male and female.
Yeah.
So the feminine energy is about stillness, nurture, remaining in one place, and calm. Whereas the masculine energy is sort of like it goes out there, and it can be a struggle, and it can be, for me, when I've been in that state, it's associated with stress. Mm. Whereas the feminine energy is, you know, you just be peaceful, send out those thoughts, do a little bit of work, know everything will be okay. And I have to say, in 10 years, pretty much, I have never actively gone out searching for work in the way that maybe some of my peers or similar type of business have done that. And maybe if I had done that, I would be, you know, hugely, hugely successful financially, but I don't think that would be, it wouldn't sit with me comfortably. I'm not one of these, you know, powerful business women in a business suit that have got to get out there. For me, that's the masculine energy way. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, it's just
a struggle. Mm.
Yeah. It's. I mean, I feel ultimately the same way. Is to just put the love into it. Consistently, yeah. put love. Nurture the people who are connected with us, so that they're happy and that they can then help other people and they can share the good words, shall we say, to their friends. And then it just grows naturally and organically in a much more solid way, really, than anything else.
Mm.
Yeah, this is great, Nettie. And what advice would you give to someone, the best things to avoid? You know, like, imagine someone starting out. What lessons have you learned that you would absolutely wish no one else had to deal with, if they could avoid them?
Okay, I think being very careful when working with friends, and if you do work with friends or people that family, it sounds strange, but be very clear with your boundaries, what they're prepared to do, what you're prepared to do, what money's involved, and be very clear from the start, because I have had a few situations where I've been, you know, things have come as a surprise and I've not been clear with what was expected of me financially or time-wise or I expected of them. And I, all, you know, I've almost lost friends over it. I've been lucky not to. So that's a key one for me.
Mm-hmm.
Second one would be really making sure you know what you are good at and sticking with that. And then, if possible, finding ways to find people to do what you are not so good at. And so leaving you, as you mentioned before, leaving you time to do what you can do. Never letting go of your passion and your belief and having that end goal. Writing down what you want. I'm sure you already do this, Michael. You've already discussed this in your other workshops and trainings. But, you know, really make a very, have a clear idea of where you want to go. All I'm saying that, you know, there's parts of me that I don't really know where I'm going with Relax Kids, but I know that I've got an ultimate goal of I want to reach many, many children.
Mm-hmm.
The way that I'm going to do that, I'm not absolutely clear, but I know I have to get that done. So having that, a clear idea, and really believe in what you're doing and having that passion is key. But in terms, you're talking more in pitfalls, being things to be careful of. Just be careful. Well, yeah, I mentioned advertising. That's something. Because I found in the past I've been... Sometimes, you know, people will say things to you and you can easily be swung by other people's opinions. So really be very clear of what your opinions are or what you feel is the right way to do for your business. I think that's all I can think of
pitfalls
for now. Yeah.
So write everything down. being, I've also experienced various, I haven't lost any friends, but pretty close to, with working with friends in business.
Yeah, it just becomes muddled.
Yeah, I think it's if you are going to work with friends, then you want to be writing down exactly what's expected, what the role is, what the profits are, if there's profits, or what the amount of money is, or whatever it is. Absolutely detailed.
The problem is, you're never sure sometimes what the profits could be.
Yeah.
And it is a tricky one because it's all a little bit sort of hearsay sometimes when you are creating a new product. So that is a tricky one, but yeah, it is just being aware and also really, really when you move away from friends, let's say, when you're working with professionals, contracts, really, really stressing that because people, you can have the best intentions, but other people may misinterpret your intentions or they expect you to do something and you expect them to do something and it needs to be in the contract. So it's the same as being with friends, but the worst thing is when you don't have those contracts and those clear boundaries in place.
Yeah, absolutely. So whether it's friends or not, it just comes back to writing things down, doesn't it, really?
Absolutely.
Get it, whether it's the vision, whether it's the specific roles and agreements, just getting it down.
Yeah.
And, that will certainly save a lot of hassle. So just the highlights that I'm, taking away here is have a clear vision that's really meaningful. Write it down so you know what you want. Chief definite aim,
Yeah.
Napoleon Hill calls it chief definite aim. We like to use those words because it's very clear sounding.
Yeah.
And then you just keep going at it. Don't worry about how it's all going to work out because we just really don't know all that. People were like, you didn't expect Stuart to turn up exactly like he did, but you did in a way because you wrote it down. But how it happened was very magical, of course. And just keep doing things in a nurturing way, really listening and caring about people. Would you agree with all that, Nettie?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
It pretty much says it all, yeah.
Yeah, and now you're 10 years on, so what's different now from 10 years ago?
Well, 10, now we have a lot of children have a lot more stress, a lot more anxiety. They're now saying that 1 in 5 children have anxiety, some sort of mental health issues, which wasn't really noticed before. ADHD is on the rise, anxiety, autism, all these things. And so now people are really starting to see that meditation, mindfulness, and relaxation is really valuable, and particularly I've got a lot of schools now recognizing this. And I did a pilot, a 3-year pilot in one school in Liverpool, and they had 19 exclusions, suspensions, expulsions, and they're primary school, little ones.
Wow.
And we did a 3-year pilot. And after 3 years of doing relaxation every day with every single child, those exclusions were reduced to 0.
Wow.
And for the last 3 years, they've had carried on with their relaxed kids and they've had no exclusions.
Wow.
Really happy, healthy children who, every child was tested for emotional intelligence, I think, or emotional something, and they all improved. Even the real underachievers.
Wow.
So that's wonderful. And so now the whole of that borough, all 57 schools, have now taken on relaxed kids.
Oh, wow.
And it's now used in, I would say, over 100,000 schools and homes in the UK and abroad.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, so, all right.
But and again, I didn't create Relaxed Kids for Schools, but what happened, parents who were teachers bought them for themselves, for their children, and they thought, oh, I'll just take this into school. But quite a few did that. So, you know, this kind of 100 monkey effect.
Yeah.
And so the whole school market developed. And so I created CDs for schools, and now I go into schools and train up teachers. And amazing, amazing results in schools.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So from you just selling a couple of CDs here and there to, you know, one a week or one a day or a couple a day or something to 100,000 schools, kids all over the place and all over the world as well.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Mm. That's amazing.
But I also say another thing with your marketing is give stuff lots of, and you do this anyway, Michael, and I'm sure you talk about this, but, you know, to build a rapport, give things away for free. Like we just created two apps on iTunes, and you know we could make money with those. One of them is a whole album of about 50 minutes, and it's a Christmas album. But what we've done is we're giving it away for free, and because we feel, you know, for the people who maybe couldn't afford it, or we just like to give things back, and then I think it always comes back to you. The more you give, the more you receive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Give. You know, it's...
Yeah.
Because, I mean, at the end of the day, how's anyone going to know if they like it if they don't try it, you know?
Exactly.
And really, if we... Like, this is why I say to people, if you really care about what you do, then you would do it for free anyway. And if you wouldn't do it for free, it's probably not something you want to be doing for a business.
Yeah, frankly. Absolutely.
That's great. That's really, really, really powerful. I didn't realize how big it got. And I'm feeling, you know, that, you know, this is just divine inspiration. There was a need that you tapped into back in the day that wasn't necessarily that much of a problem then, but you saw the beginnings of it. And now, imagine if you hadn't done that, because all these other copycat people wouldn't be doing it either, because they've seen that you're doing it now. And there would be all these people, kids, who wouldn't have any help, you know?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, even I'm not, like now, it doesn't matter about anyone doing it, because the market is there, and it's all great, you know, children are being helped.
Yeah, it's so great.
Hmm.
So give stuff for free. Don't worry about other people doing it. Because at the end of the day, you know, if they're doing something that helps people, then that's very useful, you know. I mean, how many people are out there helping other people? It's not like there's anything wrong with it.
Yeah.
So this is wonderful, Nettie. What a blessing. What a blessing.
Mm.
Yay. And just the final thing I wanted to just ask was, what is a day in your life or a day in your week? What does your average week look like? I mean, what do you do?
Well, now, it's an interesting one because, and this is very good for your superhero training, because I think we can get so caught up in our, you know, setting up business, and we, as the individual, could be the last thing of importance.
Mm-hmm.
So I think now it's now running, it's now successful. I can now stop, I can now start looking after myself more and spending more time on myself. So this is a higher priority to me maybe now than before. So I make sure I'm taking time out to go for walks, to stop and eat properly, to stop and meditate, to stretch, etc. Because otherwise you can just, you lose sight, I think. My day, I tend to get up early, around 5-6 o'clock, just naturally, never set an alarm. I get up early, spend some time quietly, and ideas can pop up there. In my olden days, of maybe slightly more frenetic time, I would be straight on the computer. But now I'm recognizing that that is not good for my spirit. I need to have time away. Because once you get on a roll with ideas, you can be on the computer from 5, and then you realize it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and you haven't got up. And that's what I would have been like. But now I'm much more balanced. And but generally I'm at home. Once a month I run a training course, training up new Relaxed Kids coaches. We're in different parts of the UK. I go once a week. I go to a school local to me where we're doing another pilot, helping children with real high emotional needs. So I'm there. I'm teaching the children. And the rest of the time, I'm writing new ideas, new CDs. I'm looking at something for teens, toddlers, adults, and scattered with some nice walks and taking time. I like sitting in. I've got a lovely little summer house in the garden, or I sit by the lake and just relax. And yes, and that's the key. I do feel. We teach what we most need to learn. So, and I've always felt I need to learn to relax. And I've always said, when I completely, completely relax, my business will take off. So that's where I am at.
Nice. Yeah, we set up businesses and companies based on what we need. It's totally true.
Yeah.
Well, and, yeah, this is great. And so, just... briefly, if you could just share the real deal, how hard you've had to work, like, stuff. Because I don't want anyone to think, oh, I can just relax and, you know, just be, like, all just nourishing, give things away for free, and I'm going to have this wonderful empire, you know. Just give people a little bit of an idea of, honestly, the amount of, you know, sweat equity you've put into this project.
Okay, well, so going back to those times, let's say we're looking 2001, 2003, around that time, 2004, before I moved to Oxford, you'd be looking, I remember working from morning, literally, 5 o'clock in the morning until 12 o'clock at night, writing articles, writing copy, just writing loads of ideas and developing the training manual. And that would lasted months. And then when I moved to Oxford, again, I do think, I remember I was just always in front of the computer or on the phone trying to get, you know, sell the CDs. It has been a full-on project. I think I would have, and there were times where I thought, gosh, you know, I could earn the same amount in just a few hours as a children's entertainer, and I'm working all these hours and hours, but I always kept why I was doing this in mind. And the power of that sort of pulled me through. But incredible, we're talking no weekends. I don't really remember having weekends at all. And now I look at, you know, Stuart works, and he generally doesn't have weekends. We have to consciously take time to stop. I'm a little bit more free now, but it has been... You know, Michael, how hard it is.
I know.
It's just, they say, don't they, that you have to put 10,000 hours into something to be considered, that's the rough
right. Yeah, that's it, 10,000 hours, basically.
To be an expert.
I mean, this is just the real deal, and it has to be mentioned, because some people have got these wonderful, lofty ideas about success and manifestation. Of course, like we know, holding a vision and holding the outcome is having an effect on the universe, and things are being attracted to us, and we don't discount that in any way. However, these 10,000 hours of hardcore getting on with it and becoming good at things, it can't be avoided, actually. And I have not yet met anyone ever who's managed to pull it off without doing that. And you see Richard Branson, all these big, everyone, like across the board, I have not come across, read any biographies, autobiographies on anything who hasn't. So I think it's just good to mention that. And in a sense, it's like your business becomes your life and your life becomes your business, because it's all one, it's all service. I mean, it's like, it's not that, like we said this before, if someone wants to have like their 9-to-5 job and then their afternoon and then their weekends off, if that's the sort of lifestyle you want to have, then go and get a job. But if you want to do your mission, you've got to forget about 9-to-5. You've got to forget about weekends. You've got to forget about the whole thing. And just imagine dedicating yourself to it 1,000% for years and years and years. So if you don't like what you're doing, then you better forget about it, you know? And that's not to say that there's been times where you haven't done stuff that you didn't necessarily like and someone could have done better than you, is there? I mean, you've done plenty of stuff that was stressful, but it had to be done. Isn't that right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, in your own words, Nettie, would you share what it takes, really and honestly? What is it going to take for someone to get on their mission?
It takes passion, commitment, dedication, good ideas, creativity, and I'm just trying to think of a way to put this. And I guess partly there's like a charm that's needed. In a lucky charm, a little bit of luck in there is good, but also the ability to have a charm, to charm other people, to attract other people, to make people feel comfortable, feel that they want to buy from you.
That's great. And that charm side of things comes probably from actually caring and doing something remarkable. And a nice thing that Nettie, have you read Seth Godin's books?
I have.
Yeah, he's great. We love Seth. Do you like him?
Yeah.
One of the things, brilliant author, one of the things he says that I really like is in his book called The Dip, is if you're not going to be the best in the world, then give it up right now. So,
brilliant.
You know, which is true. So, in a sense, you're the best in the world at what you do.
Yeah.
And so it's worth going through the dip of where things were hard and where it was like a slog and you had to do all this stuff you didn't like, because you've come out the other end. And you can just sit in your wonderful summer house and listening to your CDs, if you want to, Nettie. Do you listen to your own CDs?
I do, and my little puppy loves them.
Aww.
He really relaxes beautifully to them, so I do put them on now. And I particularly like, we listen to Believe and Achieve, which is just lots of affirmations set to music, so that's very powerful. You know, we listen to that to make us feel positive and motivated. Yeah,
That's beautiful. Ah, what a blessing. And if anyone listening to this wants to be trained up or wants to, you know, promote your products, how could they do that?
They can go to relaxkick.com. You can have a listen to a free MP3, or you can find the apps on iTunes, and you can find information about the classes, the training, and the products on the website, and also various articles that we're writing regularly.
Nice. Yeah, so I'm just sharing that because I think also another thing just to mention is that some people are entrepreneurs, visionaries, and that they have to come up with brand new things that don't exist. And other people, they're more comfortable just helping out in a mission that they believe in. you know, and there's different kinds of people, and not it's not that one's better than the other or one's more successful or anything. It's just really a matter of finding where we all fit in the world. And so I'm just mentioning this because some people listening to this might be like, well, I don't want to do this. I just want to support something. And if that's the case, then supporting something that you believe in, whatever that is absolutely the best thing to do. Would you agree with that, Nettie?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Wonderful. Any last thoughts to our wonderful superheroes?
Well, just, I think, spend time, relax, and really hold on to your goal and hold on to your dream and your vision and your and the passion and go for it. Just do it. Make mistakes. It doesn't matter. You know, I've made lots of mistakes, but it, you know, it's nice to look back on them and think, well, I'm still here. It's not the end of the world, but at the time it seems it. But no, just keep going.
Keep going, keep going.
Yeah, keep going. One step in front of the other.
Yeah. Yay, that's wonderful. Ah, what a blessing. Well, I'm very happy to be had this opportunity to chat, Nettie. It's been way too long. We need to talk more often.
Mm. Yes. And
yeah, this is very inspiring. And yeah, I look forward to talking more with you, actually, about various things.
Yes, anytime.
Yeah. Would you be open to, if any superheroes had any questions, to having another, you know, session with
sure.
you? Yeah, nice.
Yes, no problem. If there's absolutely.
Any, if they've got any specific questions, might be helpful.
Absolutely.
Yay. What a blessing. What a blessing. So.
Fantastic.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Yay. It's late over there and cold, and thanks for taking
the
time.
Have my dinner now.
The din bins, yeah. And yeah, so great. We'll talk soon, and I hope everyone listening to this took a lot of benefit. If you've got any questions for Manetta, then there'll be a little link underneath this audio where you can ask a question, and we'll take care of that. That'll be really useful. So you go for it, and yeah, look forward to seeing what happens with all you people listening to this, what you're going to do. Nettie, thanks so much again. What a blessing.
Thank you.
Yay, what a joy. And I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye. Aloha.